Welcome to NHL Draft Class. I am Adam Kimmelman here, as always, with Mike Morial. Mike, we are home from Buffalo. We have survived the 26th NHL Draft. We're about to close the book, but let's do a little bit of a recap here. Some of the things that we saw, some of the things that we heard, some of the things that we experienced. It was a fun time in Buffalo.
It was a real fun time, Adam. Obviously, first round. And according to our mocks, I think a lot of things went according to what we had there. I mean, it was a little mix up among the defensemen, and we are going to discuss that with Mr. Craig Button from TSN, and former NHL general manager will join us to recap the draft. But look, 224 selections over 2 days. First round headlined, as we know, by Gavin McKenna, Ivar Stenberg. Caleb Malhotra went number 3 to the Canucks. Alexander Kaman, number 12, to the New Jersey Devils. The Los Angeles Kings topped all teams with 11 selections. The most the club has made in more than 30 years. They had 12 in 1993. It was a record-setting 4 Latvian-born players, right, Adam? That was kind of cool to see. Albert Smits led the way, drafted number 5 by the New York Rangers. And Adam, a total of 20 trades were completed Saturday through the end of round 7, bringing the 2-day total to 33 across the 2026 Upper Deck NHL draft. 13 Friday included 9 announced during the draft. A lot of movement and a lot of good players that were taken over the 2 days.
Well, it's interesting that you say things kind of went off kilter, things we didn't expect, but I believe one of us picked 8 of the top 10 first round picks in order. I wonder who that was. Oh, that's right, it was me. Not that I'm going to brag or anything or hold that over your head, but I will say one of the most fun things I had, that I enjoyed while we were up there in Buffalo, Ilya Morozov. Thursday we had the top prospect availability, and it was, I'll give you a little credit here, is your idea to ask the guys what of the big trades that we had gone through the previous few days, what stood out to them. And Ilya Morozov said, Buffalo trading into number 20, that's pretty cool. That's where my range is.
Yeah.
The 20th pick in the draft, the Buffalo Sabres, who did they select? Ilya Morozov called his shot like he's Babe Ruth.
That's awesome stuff. It's awesome stuff. And I do want to make mention, since you brought up the 8 over 10, a total of the first round and 32 picks obviously made. So you had 26, I believe.
Correct.
And I had 27.
Yes.
So the percentage there is a little bit in my favor, not by much, but I'm going to give you credit. 8. That's very, very good. I think last year I had the higher total. So it's been fluctuating.
Yeah, I don't think anybody remembers last year.
Yeah, I know.
Too long ago. Too long ago to matter.
But yeah, I mean, first round was pretty dramatic. And just touching on Gavin McKenna for a minute too, Adam. He gets picked. We know about Justin Bieber making this selection. Obviously on stage, you saw the video of him embracing his mom, his dad, and when you saw him embrace his grandfather, right? Obviously, someone that has really helped him through tough times, particularly this year at Penn State. And it was just great when we got to talk to him afterwards. And when I mentioned what was said or what was exchanged between you and Grandpa, he said he embraced me and said that he was proud of me. And he said, I just wish I can live that over and over again. I mean, that's the type of demeanor and emotion that Gavin McKenna has. And I was so happy for him to finally get this, this kind of this monkey off his back, so to speak, get that number one pick. And now he can go to business and do what he needs to do to have an impact with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, and you can go back and listen to our previous episode of NHL Draft Class, and McKenna gets into a lot of his thoughts just moments after pulling on his Maple Leaf jersey for the first time. And I can't promote this story enough. Go back and read Mike's story on McKenna and McKenna's relationship with his grandfather, two separate pieces. They are definitely worth going out of your way to find to just understand some of what Mike talked about there, just that relationship and how important it is to Gavin and sort of what motivates him, what drives him, and honestly helped him survive some ups and downs this season at Penn State, all the draft spotlight, all the hullabaloo, all the noise in social media, the traditional media. You know, they're fantastic pieces. So I strongly suggest go out and find them. You can still find them on NHL.com/draft. Definitely worth your time to go check those pieces out.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. It was a lot of fun to put those pieces together. I got a lot of voices in the long read piece about McKenna, and then of course I was able to touch base. I'm grateful that Willie McKenna was able to help me out in getting Joe Mason on the phone and got to talk to him and put that story together. So that was great, but. We're going to talk about Gavin McKenna and a lot of these other players in our interview with Craig Button. So it's going to be interesting to hear what Craig has to say.
Yeah, Craig Button, thank you so much for joining us today on NHL Draft Class. We know it's a busy time, but we appreciate you giving us some time.
You know, you always get a yes for me when you ask me to join you on Draft Class. You two are two of my favorites anywhere.
We always love having you on, Craig. At the top, let's start at the top. We all know why McKenna was taken number one, but from a front office perspective, is there a difference between a prospect being NHL ready and being ready for the pressure, scrutiny, and expectations that come with playing in Toronto?
Well, that's something that goes hand in hand now. So you're the first overall pick, and the expectations of what that brings on a number one overall pick, and then you're in the Toronto market with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yeah, those are two pretty significant things. So being NHL ready is about being able to handle the rigors and the demands of the National Hockey League. But as we know, different markets pose different pressures and add different a brighter spotlight, and Toronto certainly qualifies in that regard. So for Gavin, I think one of the great benefits that he has is he has resources. He's got Matt Sundin, who's in the front office, who was a first overall pick and knows all too well what it means to come in to a market like Toronto. You also have Wendell Clark, a first overall pick, who's a Toronto Maple Leafs icon, who is able to, somebody that Gavin can lean on. And then you have Austin Matthews, who was the first overall pick, who's been a brilliant player for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And so for Gavin to be able to come into that scenario, I think it's just simply fantastic. Not all players get that luxury when you're drafted first overall. And you think about Matthew Schaefer. Matt Martin took him under his wing, but there weren't first overall picks there that he could lean into. So I think for Gavin, the belief that he can be ready for the NHL, but now having the opportunity to have people around him that can help him navigate what the NHL looks like in Toronto, I think it's just a really tremendous benefit that Gavin has being selected first overall by the Leafs.
For sure, having that support group around him is going to be very important. But I want to turn, Craig, to the defensive side. And all the buildup was there are these top defensemen, all projected to be top pair guys. We didn't know what order they were going to go in between Chase Reed and Albert Smits and Keaton Verhoef and Daxon Rudolph and Carson Carroll's. When it was Daxon Rudolph first off the board to number four, at number four to Buffalo, was it a surprise? Was it something you expected? Take me through like your thought process there as you see these names come off the board.
Well, I wasn't surprised. That was the first thing. And we can all look at how we are gonna see how we think the draft will unfold. We see the draft unfolding based on what we know. Well, the Buffalo Sabres aren't telling anybody what they're gonna do at four, and the New York Rangers aren't telling anybody what they're gonna do at five. As you guys know, you spend a tremendous amount of time and put in great work in trying to give people not only the background on the players, but a glimpse of what could happen. And that's where people are taking in their information. And it's good information, but the teams aren't giving away their information. But when we look at the draft, and I'll just be real quick here, there was two wingers, there was two centers, and there was five defensemen. They all went in the top nine. I don't think anybody was surprised that they went in the top nine. We felt that McKenna, Stenberg, McKenna were going to go 1-2-2-1. That's how it went. And then we start to see, okay, Malhotra is a nice fit in Vancouver. And it ended up being that way. And now the defensemen now come into play. To me, Buffalo is going to take a defenseman because they just traded Bowen Byram. I felt that the right shot defenseman was right there for the taking because trying to get some balance. They drafted Radomirka the year before. Now they get some balance with the right shot defenseman. Was that going to be Rudolph, which it ended up being? Was it going to be Chase Reed? Was it going to be Keaton Vierhoff? So not surprised by a right shot defenseman. And again, when you start to look at what my expectations are, I felt the same as you guys. Here's these five defensemen. What order are they going to go in? I didn't know. I felt that the margins were slim between the five of them. And as we saw it unfold in the draft, I mean, they all went there. They all went from 4 to 9, you know, interspersed with a couple of players that weren't defense. Well, no, just Viggo Bjork. So after when you start to put it all together, it becomes really fascinating with respect to how the teams evaluate and the margins being so thin. And I think that much like the draft when Dobson went 12 and we, or not, sorry, not the draft with 12, when Lefshunov went 2, and then we saw the run of defensemen, Yakimchuk at 7, then Parekh, Salayev, Dickinson, and Bouyam at 9, 10, 11, 12. We knew that those six defensemen were going. We didn't know what order they were going to go into. I think this draft replicated that to a certain extent.
Of course, I got to ask you a New Jersey Devils question, Craig, for Devils Nation. What did you think of their choice to select Sweden's Alexander Command at number 12, which also was the first for GM Sonny Mehta?
I love Alexander Command. I think that as you and you and Adam put together the list, you keep people abreast of how players are developing, how they're improving. And, you know, we start out a scouting year. And we have a number of players that we know a lot about, but there's a lot of players, even more players that we don't know a lot about, and we need to watch them and we need to understand what their potential is, because that's really what we're trying to get to. That's what everybody's showing. What is their potential? And you start to watch Alexander Command, and he becomes first. This is interesting. Why wasn't he on the Hlinka team? Right. That's the first question you ask, and then you start to watch him more, and you go, he's not bad. We should watch him more. Then you watch him more and you go, oh boy, this guy's pretty good. Then you make this decision, he's pretty good. You go, how good is he? And you start to really believe that he's a really good player. I just see him as a complete two-way center. I see him as somebody that can play the game in so many different areas. He's competitive. He's hard. And one of the things I like about him, and not every center has this, they're able to look left, they're able to look right. They know where the puck needs to go. They know where to be when they don't have the puck. They're always in the right spots at the right times. I can't begin to tell you how many times I watch Alexander play and I'm thinking to myself, okay, Alexander was there. Who was there? Who was in the right spot? Who chipped that puck ahead? Sometimes it doesn't turn into an assist, but it turns into a chance or even a goal because of the play, leaning on somebody taking. I think he's got tremendous potential. And I think about the New Jersey Devils, and I start to think about Hischier, and I think he's a Hischier-type player. Listen, if he can come anywhere close to being that good of a player as Nico Hischier, I mean, the Devils are going to be in a great spot. But you have Jack Hughes, you have Nico Hischier, and for Alexander Command, I think now he doesn't have to come in right away. And when I say right away or whenever he comes in, and have to kind of carry the load. He can come in and, you know, settle in and be a good player. Maybe like Anton Lundell was in Florida as a rookie. You knew he was good. I mean, he was picked around the same area, 15th, I believe. But he had Barkov there. And then he had Sammy Bennett there. And so now that transition to the NHL becomes not easy, but it becomes a little less burdensome. And I think the same thing for Alexander. Come on. But I love him. I do. I think he's a terrific player.
It's interesting you make that Florida comparison with Lundell, because I think Sonny Mehta was in Florida probably when they made that draft pick.
Yep,
so
yep.
The thought of Hughes and Hischier and Command gives a pretty good foundation to build around. Now, Command going in the first round wasn't a surprise. I'm just curious, in your mind, Craig, if anything surprised you Friday night, and I'm thinking the two picks that Ottawa made, Jonas Lagerberg Hone at number 25 and Jackson Covert at number 32, you know, Hone with the injury, maybe people forgot about him a little bit. Cover was sort of on that fringe of going anywhere, and I guess like that 25 to 40 range. But did those two moves stand out to you, or did anything else that you saw Friday night surprise you a little bit?
Yeah, and I think that You've heard me say this before, and we've talked about it privately and publicly amongst us, is that, we can all go to the draft and we know exactly we can take 20 players and go, they're going in the first round. We know it. And that number could be 22, it could be 20, but we know for sure. And then you get this next group of players, like you said, Adam, in the range of 25 to 40. And why do teams go, yeah, we traded up to get a player. Like Montreal trades from 28 to 26. Somewhere along the line, they wanted that player and they said, we're not going to wait and hope. We believe he's a player that we want for whatever reason. So, and teams go, yeah, you know what? He was higher on our list. when they draft somebody at 42 and they go, he was much higher on our list. I think it just speaks to what we talk about, that range, Adam, of could go 25 to 42 or 43. So I'm going to deal with Hone first. And I watched Hone the year before in February of 25. He was with that and the 07 group. And I always go and watch the players, especially internationally, when they're underage, that born after September 15th, which makes them eligible, I zero in on that group of players really significantly, because I don't know when the next time I'm going to have to evaluate them. The difference in terms of what tournaments they show up at, where do you go and find them and whatnot. So watch him at that tournament. You can see some ability, but I said this on the day they drafted him. I didn't see any discernible quality that made him jump out to me. Now he gets injured. So you'd be wanting to watch him. Now you hear about him, you can see some metrics and numbers that are, oh geez, that's pretty eye-popping. So you'd like to have more viewings on that type of player rather than less. But at that point in the draft, if you're betting on upside, you're betting on potential, and you're betting on skill, I don't think there's any question that he showed skill. And you say, okay, let's take a chance here on the higher end potential side of things. And by all accounts, and you trust your regional scout in Sweden, people that have seen him as much as they possibly could, and then you make that selection. I think Jackson Culver is a really good player, and I think he's raw and unfinished. And then I start to think, I watch how much he progressed over the course of the year, and I think, yeah, you go and play for Dale Hunter, it's like finishing school. You go there, you get an opportunity to learn. Like the one thing that Dale does like great as a junior coach, and a lot of junior coaches do this, but here's where I feel that Dale, like a player in that type of environment, really benefits. Jackson has really good skating ability. He's got puck handling ability. He's got some aggressiveness and some assertiveness. But Dale shows you how to use all those attributes in a real positive way. He connects it. He makes it all become something that where the whole becomes greater than the individual parts. And I think that's where Jackson really benefited from playing for Dale. And I think he will continue to benefit under that type of tutelage. And I can go back in time and tell you all kinds of players that, and specifically Dale, Sokolovsky, who went to the Flyers, is another player that benefited from that. Not all players get that benefit playing in depending on where they are. Certainly Jackson did. And again, back to your comment, Adam, some teams might have had him 45th, some teams might have had him 25th. Obviously, it came up to the Senators pick, and they said, that's our guy. And Donnie Boyd, who is their longtime scout, has got tons of experience in this league, right? He lives in London. So if anybody would have a real grasp on how much he's improved, like probably more regularly than going in and watching him over time, it'd be Donnie Boyd. And I think that the Ottawa Senators just said, this is a guy that we like, and we think that his potential, even though he's raw, is pretty good. And I agree with it. It's not so much the pick. There's lots of players that I would agree with. It's not about me agreeing with the pick, but I like the assessment of the player having really significant potential because he's so raw and still unfinished to a large extent.
Well, Craig, I mean, you spoke earlier about Adam, myself and Adam, our lists and our stories and how they, gain traction closer to the NHL draft. Well, Adam and I are always looking at the material that you put out for TSN, and it's tremendous, and fans can check it out. The list, Craig's list, and we always talk about the rankings off NHL draft class, discussing them. Wow, Craig has this guy there or that guy there. So You've been a tremendous help to us and all fans throughout the world. So a credit to you and what you've done as well. So thank you for that. But I do have
You
a
raised the
question.
bar, Mike. Mike, you guys raised the bar. And here's the thing too, is like you want to you not every player drafted is great. You want to be realistic about what they are as players, what their potential is, where they fit in, right? So I appreciate the kind words, but we all push each other to be better, right? And again, we put numbers beside players, right? And it's not as simple as just a number. You always have a group of players that you're kind of debating. We talked about the five defensemen, right? I'm sure we could sit here and go, well, I like him a little bit more. It's not like there's this wide gap where somebody's drafting a player and you're going, geez, Adam and Mike had that guy 64th and he went second overall, right? We're debating about the top end of players. So I appreciate the kind words, but you guys are
Always.
terrific in the work you do.
Thanks, thanks. But I got to ask you, I know Adam asked you about the first round. Favorite pick in the second round and why, Craig? Any particular player?
There's a few players. I mean, like, I'm going to be really, really remiss. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Marcus Rucht, Jordan, and his brother Liam in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
I mean,
good one.
I love the Rucht twins. I love them. And, I'm watching them for a number of years and watching how well they play together. And, like, I think they're very, very good hockey players. I think their potential is really good. And watching them, like again, 1 + 1 = 3 in their case. And you consider that they were 1 and 2 in the Western Hockey League scoring as 17-year-olds and how well they play. Willie Desjardins, another just a great development coach. I talk about Dale Hunter. Willie's in the same class and players get better. And certainly you think about the first pick with Liam. And like I don't know if other teams kind of go, well, geez, we can't draft the other brother or if their lists are reflective of selecting other players, if there's kind of like an electric fence that goes up that says, well, we can't draft that other guy now. And then Pittsburgh at 39. I just love it. I just love the fact that they'll continue to play together and that they can have an opportunity. I watched the little video when Sid was talking to them, and I'm like, you're just warm all over. Honestly, I'm warm all over. So while there's other players that are picked, and you're happy for all the players, as I know you guys are, it's a special time in the draft. Marcus Rucht, yeah, Marcus Rucht joining younger brother Liam.
So yeah, I was going to ask you about that. We saw the video of them talking to Sid. Like we talked to them at the combine. We had them on the NHL Draft Class podcast, and they could not have been happier. You couldn't sandblast a smile off their faces. And we had asked them at the time, "Are you guys sort of hoping you can stay together?" And they weren't shy about saying, "Yeah." And then we talked to Liam and Marcus after they picked Marcus, and we said, "Did you guys have an idea about Pittsburgh?" And Liam said, "Yeah." After they picked me, they asked me about Marcus and a few things, and they were interested. So let's kick it forward with those two because it was one of the big highlights of the weekend. They're going to go back to Medicine Hat. They've announced they've committed to North Dakota for 2 years from now. How big is that jump to college going to be for them as far as, they get drafted together, they'll go to college together. I'm assuming they'll room together. What do they have to do now to get to the NHL together?
Well, if I'm Marcus, I want to know exactly what Liam told Kyle Dubas and the scouting staff. But like, I hope Liam said, listen, he gets me the puck and I like to score. I hope that was what Liam said. And like, you drafted me to score goals. Well, he's pretty good at getting me the puck and helping me score. After their next year in Medicine Hat, that'll be 3 years in the Western Hockey League. And I think when you're the leading scorers in the Western Hockey League at 17, 18, I mean, they turned 18 in February. Like there comes a point in time where you can continue to be a good player, but is it going to be best for your development? I don't think they're ready for the American. I'm a big believer in this. I'll make this statement. I believe that if you're not ready for the NHL at 19, I think the American Hockey League is a harder league to play in at 19 than the NHL if you're not ready. So I like the opportunity with what's happened with the NCAA ruling where players now can make that intermediate step. I think it's a really good step for players. I think it helps them in a number of areas. I think it helps them every day, the grind. in terms of playing against older, stronger players. It's not just the games, it's also the everyday grind and practice. I mean, college hockey ramps you up. So like there's a build for the weekend. Off ice training or in season training, you know, that's something you don't get an opportunity playing 66, 68, even 72 games, wherever it is. So now that opportunity to allow that maturation to take place, get stronger, get more ready for pro hockey, I think it's a real benefit for them. And like, and now those challenges that you get along the path as you're developing, like you want increasingly hard challenges. And that's why I say 3 years in the Western Hockey League, you know, it's not that they can't still be good players. It's not that the league isn't good, but I think for their development, it allows for that next step. And it's not for every player, but I think in their case, it would be good. Willie Desjardins, the coach of the Medicine Hat Tigers, he says, I try to emphasize to young players, we're here for development. And I cannot just say that if you're here, it's the only place you can develop. He goes, I want to help them develop the best they can be in Medicine Hat. And if that means that they need to go someplace else to continue their development, he says, I'm encouraging that. I love that attitude from Willie, and I think it benefits the players tremendously.
Here's one kind of off the beaten path, Craig. If you were able to sit in with one team during the draft this year and hear the internal debate, which team would it be and why?
Oh, that's a, I don't know, I'm like, that's a great question. And something I've never thought about. And I'm trying to, that as I talk now, I'm trying to think of where I'd like to be. I think if you gave me the choice, it would be San Jose, because they had 2-9-21. And you know, I love what Mike Grier is doing in San Jose. I think there's no question they're a team on the rise. But how you're looking at the draft and how you're looking at those picks. People say, well, San Jose, geez, they had a really good day. Huh, you're picking 2-9-21. You better have a good day. Like, that's an opportunity that doesn't present itself very often. So just the thinking about how they go from two and then they're sitting at nine, and obviously they take Keaton Veer off and then Ryan Lynn at 20. And I, the thinking, and as I look at it from the outside in, I'm looking at how they're building their team. I'm looking at how they're fitting players into different parts of their team. And I really like it. I really like the way that they're team building. Mike Grier was a great competitor as a player. He understood different parts of a team, how integral they are to success. And I think he's building the San Jose Sharks in the same exact way. So, but I'd love to just be in there hearing, like, you know, how they debate, because it never comes down to one player. I'm sure that you're picking two. And I thought what was interesting is that if they hadn't made the trade for nine, would they have taken a right shot defenseman at two? That's because it felt like that could be the bookend to Sam Dickinson. Well, now they got potentially two bookends to Sam Dickinson, and but two different players in Keaton and Ryan that, you know, can really add different aspects of the game. I want to speak really quickly to Ryan. And having watched Ryan for a number of years, really good offensive instincts, lots of ability to jump into the attack. And I told him this. I said, I might have been a little bit too hard in my marking on you during the course of the season. And then I watch him come and play internationally for Canada. And last year at the U18, he was a huge part of their championship, playing with Carson Carls. They were a shutdown defensive pair, and they won the gold medal down in Texas. And then this year I watch him again, and I said to him, I said, you were asked to produce offense for Vancouver Giants, and you did a great job of that. And sometimes, you know, I said, I'm guilty of it. I find myself saying, well, can you do this? I said, I've already seen you do that. I don't know why I dismissed that. And I think that, yeah, he's excellent defense offensively, but I've seen him be a really strong defensive player. Keaton, you know, still developing. You know, he had some of those challenges at college hockey, but he was ready for those challenges. So I think now you look at Dickinson, you look at Veerhoff, you look at Ryan Lynn, and it becomes pretty fascinating. And they're all different ages. Well, they're two. Well, Dickinson's a year older than Veerhoff and Ryan Lynn, but I find it fascinating how they build their team and how those discussions would have gone inside that San Jose Sharks room.
I'm glad you said that because I think it was probably right after they took Ryan Lynn, ESPN cut to a shot of the Sharks war room, And I've never seen a person grin, smile bigger than I saw Mike Greer, just a huge smile on his face, knowing what he had just added with the three picks in the first round with Stenberg and Verhoef and Lynn. And it, you know, like, yeah, 2-9 and 21, they should do well. I think they did exceptionally well, and it'll be fun to watch those guys sort of as they move forward here. But speaking of moving forward, you know, we're literally just closing the book on 26. Let's talk about the 27 draft, Craig Button. And listen, well, look, we know you've already got your book already in progress on who could potentially be the top of the 27 draft class. Obviously, we've all heard about Landon DuPont. He's going to make the jump from the Everett Silvertips in the Western League to the University of Michigan this season. Is he, can we already kind of write his name down as the number one guy in the draft? Who are you watching as your top guys for the 27 draft?
Sure, you don't want to talk about 28? Why don't we just jump to 28? Why don't we just skip over
Well, I
27,
think
Adam?
Mike's
Like, you know.
grand. We're trying to figure out what year Mike's grandson is going to be eligible for the draft. So I'm sure that book's already started too, sir.
Well, no, so like, you know, I don't want to, I mean, what we have is a lot of information on Landon. He, you know, exceptional player, he's done very well. I do not think that he should be penciled in as the number one overall pick. Do I think he should be in consideration for the first overall pick? Absolutely, he should be. But there are other players that I think should be right in the discussion with Landon DuPont. And I'll name them right here, right now. I think it's Nazar Provorov, the Russian winger. I mean, he's big, strong, scores, aggressive, competitive. Alexei Joseph, the big center from the Quebec Remparts, and Carter Meyer, who's the U.S. player with the National Team Development Program. And so I go 6'4.5" winger in Provorov, who scores and drives the net and got great ability. You got Alexei Joseph, 6'4.5" centerman, who reminds me a lot of Malkin at the same age. And then Carter Meyer, who's 6'3" almost, I mean, and plays the game with great skill and great ferocity, and he's ferocious. And he wants to be a difference maker in the game. And then you put Landon in there, you could put Jonah Neuschwander in there, and that's just a glimpse of six players or five players that I think that certainly deserve consideration. There's others. We talk about the Russian scenario. You know, I don't have a great book on the 09s. I have a book on some of them. There are four or five of these 09s from Russia that I believe are going to be first round draft picks. That 09 group is a really, really strong group of players. And that's going to take time to sort out. That's going to take time, as you know, we need the season, we need to watch, we need to see what's going to unfold. As you watch these players, wherever they're going to play in the Russian league. But Landon is a top-notch, you know, offense driving defender. And the biggest thing I think you have to be careful with for me is that you don't get it caught up in his height, because it's the same thing that led Quinn Hughes to be in the 7th overall pick. So, and Quinn, by the way, was at Michigan when he was drafted. So there's some correlation here and some symmetry between Landon and Quinn Hughes. And Landon is a tremendous player. I'm just allowing that there's other players that should be in the discussion with Landon DuPont.
Craig, this is always a great discussion. You're fantastic, my friend. We can be talking for hours here. I also like the Zilkin kid from Saginaw. He's
Oh,
one
yeah.
that I have my eyes on down the stretch. And for a kid that young to be captain of the team, I thought was pretty significant. As an underager. So Zilkin is another kid I have my eyes on for sure for Saginaw. But Craig, you never disappoint.
But Mike, I got to
Yeah,
tell you should
yeah.
have your eyes on him, because he forces your eyes onto him because of the way he plays. I mean, he plays with high-end skill, high-end competitiveness, and everybody I've talked to about him has said he is just a tremendous young person with tremendous leadership skills. I know that Drew Bannister at the U18 told me, he says, I like he goes, I can't say enough about this young man. I mean, he's everything you want in a player and a person. So I'm right there with you. And we know that there could be a player or two or three, a Chase Reed that you start to watch early in October and you go, uh-oh, you better keep paying attention to this young guy, as we saw. And Caleb Malhotra was another example of players. Albert Schmitz, So we know we're going to get some players to move in there, but Dima absolutely belongs in that category of players. And it's a good draft year. And well, every year is a good draft year, isn't it? Because we
It
make
is.
it a good draft year.
No doubt. No doubt. Craig, you never disappoint. I'm so glad I get to share with you the experience of grandfatherhood. It's quite a club to be in, buddy. Hopefully, you get some time to enjoy your summer with them. As always, thank you, buddy.
Yeah, it's enjoyable. I've kidded with my daughters. I said if I could change things, I'd have my grandchildren first.
I like it. I like it. Thank you, Craig.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Mike, great stuff from Craig Button as always. His opinions on the 26 draft are everything that we hoped to hear. You know, he's the expert. He's been around long enough. Former general manager of the Calgary Flames. He's got a Stanley Cup from the Dallas Stars. Knows his stuff, and there's nobody better.
Nobody better. It was great information as always. I thought it was kind of interesting how, you know, he went in depth a little bit on the Ruck twins, right, Adam? You know, and that kind of leads me into some of my favorite moments from the 26 draft. But the Ruck story was one that as soon as it happened, like I tweeted it, like this is going to be fantastic. Like Penguins fans are going to really appreciate you know, Marcus and Liam once they reach the NHL. We all know, you know, they'll go back to Medicine Hat and mature a little bit more, gain some more strength under a great coach in Willie Desjardins. So, look, the Ruck brothers became the eighth set of brothers, first in 16 years to be drafted by the same franchise in the same NHL draft. So, a credit to them. When I was talking to Marcus too, you know, he said it was hard not to smile when the Penguins pick came up early in the second round because he knew there was a potential that it could happen. They were both hoping for it. They just didn't know. And then when he heard his name, it was just so much joy and excitement. So that was one of my favorite moments. I also thought, you know, looking back on the draft in general and the amount of Sweden-born players, right, Adam, that were selected here. Obviously, Ivar Stenberg was the first of a record seven Swedish-born players chosen in the first round. And the draft ended up with 25 Sweden-born players over 7 rounds. I thought, you know, center Viggo Björk going to the Winnipeg Jets at number 8 was really, really good. Obviously, we both had Viggo going to the Jets in our mock draft. So we both feel as though the Jets needed that player, some energy, someone that's going to be uplifting, someone that's going to provide some impetus for that club in the future. And Viggo Björk is certainly that type player. So, and when we talked to Stenberg, I says, what'd you think of Viggo going to the Jets? And he even said, I think that's going to be the steal of the draft, right? Eighth overall, Stenberg thought he should have been top five. So I thought that was a pretty cool moment. Obviously, the Latvians being taken. And then I just want to touch on Caleb Melhalter, right, Adam? Another fun story here. Caleb, you know, finally earning some of the bragging rights in the family after Manny, his dad Manny, had stole some of the spotlight at the NHL Combine when he was named coach of the Vancouver Canucks on June 1st. You know, Caleb gets his moment in the sun here at the NHL draft, selected number 3. And you heard all week about the talk. You saw the stuff on Twitter about why should the Canucks take Melhalter when his dad is the coach? Is it going to be beneficial for the locker room? What's going to happen? Well, look, the bottom line was the Canucks need depth down the middle. They need a two-way centerman that's going to have this type of impact Caleb Melhalter has. And when I watched Caleb this season, you know, I did see a Nico Hischier type of player. So great pick. I thought it was a great family type of story for the Melhaltras. You know, when you think about the athletic family that they have, but I really appreciated that story as well. But that kind of closes the book a little bit here, Adam, on the 2026 NHL draft. And obviously, now we look forward, as you did, and as you asked Craig Button about the 27 NHL draft.
Yeah, and Craig dropped a few names there. Obviously, Landon DuPont, the big defenseman from Everett in the Western League, who's going to play at University of Michigan in the fall. He's the guy that we've already heard the most about, and for good reason. You know, he was fifth among Western Hockey League defensemen this season as a 16/17-year-old, 73 points in 63 games. He's going to play at the University of Michigan next season, kind of following along what Keaton Verhoef did as far as big defenseman leaving the Western Hockey League in his draft year to go play college hockey. and Michigan's a great program. The Big Ten seems to be where all the elite hockey talent is. But there's a few more names there that were interesting. Carter Meyer, the forward from the U.S. national team, who's going to play in Quebec in the Quebec League next season. Son of former Philadelphia Flyers and New York Islanders defenseman Freddie Meyer, who I covered, and now I feel old. Alexis Joseph, the big center from St. John in the Quebec League, as Craig said, a little reminiscent of Evgeny Malkin. Nazer Privilov, big Russian forward who's probably going to play for CSKA in the KHL this season. Dima Zhilkin, the captain in Saginaw in the Ontario League. No lack of talent there, and we're going to get an up-close view of them coming up here at the World Junior Summer Showcase coming up here at the end of July in Windsor, July 26th to August 1st. You'll see the United States, Canada, Finland, and Sweden there. It's really the jumping-off point for the World Junior Championship in December in Edmonton and Red Deer. And Mike, you and I both will be on hand in Windsor to capture all of that, all of that moments, all those moments, kind of meet some of the new players, kind of start building the book for the 2027 NHL draft.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll be able to see two top 10 picks for the United States at that selection camp, and Chase Reed, the defenseman, obviously taken by the Seattle Kraken, and Wyatt Cullen was taken by the Nashville Predators at number 10, the forward from the NTDP. So, two good prospects there that we'll get to enjoy. And then, there are a few players here that are going to look to make their mark and maybe take a step up and try to make this team. So I think that there's a total of three returnees for the team that were on the fifth place finish for the USA last year. So those guys will be out for a little revenge too, to make certain, Chase Reed being one of those players, make certain that this US team does a little better this time around. So we love the World Junior Summer Showcase. So it's gonna be a lot of fun in Windsor to see these four countries battle it out.
Yeah, you can see the rosters for the U.S. and Sweden right now on NHL.com. We'll have the rosters for Finland and Canada hopefully within the next week or so. But for now, the 2026 NHL Draft, and for NHL Draft Class, it is dismissed.